Rainmaker FM.
This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? Welcome to The Showrunner, the podcast for people dedicated to creating remarkable audio experiences for their audience. This is episode number 89. I am your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital, and I will be joined momentarily, as I always am, by my "Is he a real person or a robot host?" Johnny Naster, the host of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'll explain what I mean by that in just a second. The Showrunner is brought to you by the all-new StudioPress Sites, a turnkey solution that combines the ease of an all-in-one website builder with the flexible power of WordPress. It's perfect for bloggers, podcasters, and affiliate marketers, as well as those selling physical products, digital downloads, and membership programs. If you are ready to take your WordPress site to the next level, see for yourself why over 200,000 website owners trust StudioPress. Go to rainmaker.fm/StudioPress right now. That's rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. All right, so Johnny, the reason why I called, why I referred to you as a, "Is he a real person or a robot host?" Have you watched the show Westworld? Did you get into that? It's an HBO show.
I've never seen it.
See, and ever since I watched that show, it's made me question whether the people that I'm seeing, are they real people or are they robots? And I don't want to give away any like twists or interesting angles of that show, so I won't say any more. But everybody who has watched Westworld knows right now exactly what I'm talking about. But I recommend it. It's a really good show. I think you'll find it interesting. I recommend it to everybody listening too if you haven't watched it. It's good. I don't know where they'll go for the next season. But season one was really, really interesting and compelling. So
that's way less offensive than I was expecting.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's like something I did on like last week's episode, like that was very robotic of me.
No. It's very much just Heather and I just got done watching Westworld, just got done with the first season. So it's still very fresh in my mind. And so I'm sitting here wondering, are you a real person or are you actually a robot that is just so lifelike that I would never know the difference? And imagine a world where you would actually be wondering that. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? Kind of crazy.
There's crazier stuff in the real world, Jared. There's crazier stuff in the real world.
I suppose that's true. So where are we going with this episode? What are we talking about today? What are we doing?
Well, first. Today, it happened. I don't know how many interviews I've done. Episode 318 came out today. I've scrapped a whole bunch of interviews. So let's call it 320 interviews. I know we've answered this on huddles with our Showrunner course members before. I know this has been just a general sort of thing. But today, this morning, my first interview of the day, I forgot to plug in my microphone.
No!
And I recorded the whole episode.
I shouldn't be laughing.
On, it sucks. On my laptop microphone with me sort of tapping away at times. Oh, and man. The funny thing is that the dude that I was interviewing is also a podcaster, has been for years. And he was like, as he was on my show, then he was like, and afterwards, I'm going to like ask you about 20 minutes worth of questions for my show as well. I'm like, all right. So as soon as we're done, he's just like, John, let me just, do you have like a real microphone? Or
oh,
I was
no.
like, what? He's like, I feel like such, like, I don't know why I didn't say it at the beginning, he says, but you're like speaking through your laptop. Oh my God. So there it is, folks. There it is. And so Skype's been, I don't want to pass the blame, but Skype has been acting up in any number of ways.
Yes.
And I had actually just like done a call with somebody quickly right before that, like just a 5-minute call, and the microphone was set up, but then somehow it switched and I didn't even think about it because mm-hmm. he could hear me perfectly. And
I have dealt with this with Skype so often. You have to check before every recording. Like, did you notice right when I said, hey, how do I sound? How do I sound? Right before we started recording, it was to triple check because I have had that exact same thing happen, man. And it is the worst.
And I've been spoiled. It's been good. And I've never, in 320 episodes, this has never happened. But there it is. And so I'm waiting for my editor to see if, because it was a really cool conversation. I don't want to have to redo it because it's like, it just won't be the same. So, and I might just put in a funny disclaimer at the beginning, like, because he's on a professional microphone too, because he's a podcaster. So it's, there's me. Hey, how's it going?
I think you probably got to go disclaimer. I had that happen with a recent episode of the Assembly Call too, where I thought everything was good. I thought my microphone was on, and I go and listen to it, and it's like, what the hell? Like, why? You know, why does it sound like I'm just talking into my laptop? Well, because I was, because that's the only microphone that was picking it up. You know, because I've said to my co-host, did you guys notice that I sounded terrible? But yeah,
there it is.
I know it happens.
There it is.
It happens. Wow. Okay.
Life lessons.
So, what are you? Do you have a plan for preventing that in the future? Like, do you have like a different? I mean, obviously, again, it's Skype, so you just got to make sure that you double check. That's the biggest thing. Just because you did a recording 10 minutes earlier, don't assume that all the settings are the same. Check, double check, test before every recording. Do you have any other systems in place to try and prevent that?
That's it. I've literally just added that step, which I did at the beginning of this call now, is as I'm on the call at the beginning now, I just go into Skype settings, check preferences. There it is, audio. ILPR40.
Yeah. See, and like you and I are like an old married podcast couple to where like if one of our audio sounds bad, we'll just say it and we'll notice it like right off the bat because we record all the time. So if something's off.
And my guest feels terrible because he's like, he has a co-host too and he would have obviously told him, but he's like, I don't know why I didn't tell you.
So that was my question. I mean, it seems kind of unprofessional when you have a guest on to be like, hey, how does my audio sound? But do you think that's a worthwhile thing to just test it with the guest? Because what they're hearing is probably going to be what is being recorded. So is that a worthwhile question to ask, or does that make you seem unprofessional?
Yeah, I wouldn't ask my guest. Unless it was somebody like that who was into this sort of scene. But otherwise, no. If I check and it says that it's on the right mic, then I'm good to go. Okay. It literally said laptop mic, built-in microphone. Oh. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, my God. I can't believe we did this for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
So there it is, folks.
Well, thank you for being vulnerable and sharing this most embarrassing of show running stories with us.
Apparently, that's what this whole season's about, Jared. Apparently, that's what this whole season's about.
I'm just standing back.
Watch the train wreck from afar.
I've revealed enough of these stories of my own. I'm standing back now.
So what do you say? We should jump into this main topic.
Yeah, let's hop into it.
So, podcasting, a stand-up comedy of content creation. I really just love the title. I got to see where we can go with this.
So I like it too.
So like last week's episode, which is from a personal experience of mine, my wife and I went to a comedy club 3 weeks ago, I think, on Saturday. And from the very first person coming on, instantly I was like, oh my goodness. And these things just kept coming to me, like the correlation between stand-up and podcasting. And to me that they're really important lessons and some interesting things. And especially because this club is actually, it's really cool. It's called The Corner Comedy. And their slogan is, so small, it's funny. And it's insane. Like there's
that's funny.
There's four tables. You have to buy in advance the ticket. You have to show up 15 minutes in advance, or else you don't get your seat. And they're not like, they don't have ticketed seats, but there's only so many seats. I think there's 18 seats, and that's it. That's all the place. And the people are like right there talking to you. The bar is right behind your head, and they'll just like pass you like a beer if you want, like into the audience, because it's so small. It's actually comical. Wow. That it's so small. So it's really cool, but also would be really intense as the stand-up comedian, which it is as obviously a showrunner, and knowing that you're personally there in people's headsets, it's a really intimate experience. So therefore, it's hard sometimes, right? Because the exposure of yourself. So yeah, so these are some lessons or, yeah, I think things that we could learn, because I think most of us enjoy stand-up comedy, have watched at least a routine on Netflix or something. And so I think it'll help us improve our show running.
Well, and the way that this venue is set up is just another lesson about the value that can be built by speaking to small audiences, and apparently the business results that can be generated speaking to small audiences, because clearly they can stay in business and they operate okay despite the fact that they're so small.
They do Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. They do three sets, I believe 7, 9, and 11, with six people, six different comedians per set. The set is 60 minutes long, and six people get 10 minutes. With literally, like, one person is done, and the next person is walking up, and they're walking. And it's, I mean, it's an 8-foot walk between the bar. And they just, one after the other, so you're just overwhelmed for, like, an hour of six people giving it their best. It's really cool. And six different people for each of the three things, and they sell out each.
It would be interesting to talk to a comedian, and especially a comedian who has the varied experience of speaking at a venue like that and maybe also doing like a bigger venue, you know, and what is the difference? What is the intimacy difference? How, you know, how do they approach it differently? Is the feedback that they get different? Because I have to imagine it's a much more intimate feeling for you as an audience member, you know, being in such a small venue, to where if you're one of 18 people, like, your laugh means a lot more to that comedian and actually to the entire atmosphere of the performance. Because when you're at a comedy show, you know, the reaction of the audience can be contagious, and that can help, you know, get the comedian going, and like, it all kind of builds on itself, and you have fewer people there to help build that atmosphere for both the audience and the comedian, which would make it really interesting, especially from an audience perspective.
Right. And so we went to the 11 p.m. one, because that was all there was tickets for left. And so I didn't want to be eavesdropping, but it's such a tiny place that after, as I finished my beer, the comedians were talking behind me. And that actually came up. And so that's actually lesson number three, is the venue. And who, like, the size of it, because it plays a big part. So I won't get into that now, but that is going to come up. And yeah, we should just jump into this.
Hey, let's do it.
So this is the part where I was like, this has to be an episode.
Yeah.
The first person came up, and the first thing he said, so this lesson is define who your audience is and speak to them. But the first thing he said was, who here are dog owners? And then who here are cat owners?
Dog.
There was no cat owners, and everybody was dog owners. Instantly, and I just, like, to my wife, I like hit her in the arm, and it's tiny. So he's right there. So, but I was like, he just split test us. And he literally did, his whole routine was like making fun of cat owners and like doing jokes about like things our dogs do. I was like, oh my God. He just literally at the beginning, like, who is the audience? And I'm going to, like, I'm playing to you. Here we go. And I was like, wow. And people were just like rolling and laughing. I was like, we just gave him the jokes.
That's amazing. Brilliant. What a great idea. So do you know, did he have an entire set of material ready if the majority had said they were cat owners?
Yes, because of the venue and because of what we were doing, it didn't matter. And we'll get into that in the third one, but it was, I mean, for 10 minutes, right? The whole set is very small anyways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he played a bigger routine, he might put both into it because it's a bigger audience. But here it's kind of, he probably feels like there's a good chance that it goes one way or the other. Mm. That's just what he did. He just split tested us and then ran with the jokes, and there was no hesitation. It was just like, and it was brilliant. And I was like, that's really impressive, right? So this is what we say when we say, like, defining your audience. But then also your audience can mean different things. Meaning that on your show, you can have your audience, but I mean, what if you're going to another show to be a host on there? Or what if you get to write for another blog? The audience is different, and so you need to play to those audiences in that way, and be willing to change and not just be so adamant that this is how I am and this is who I speak to. It's just how it is. I do this all the time. If I'm on a show and I'm talking about podcasting, or if I'm talking about business, or if I'm talking about music, I talk in completely different terms. It's still me. It's still like me trying to be that person or being that person, but it's me knowing who the audience is and what will work the best for them at the time. And I really think that it's crucial. Obviously, you can't necessarily just split test your audience on every listen, but there's such ways we can do this and find out. It's knowing who your audience is, or we all know who we want to speak to at the beginning, but oftentimes we end up with a slight varied version of that audience who actually listens to us. And we need to ask the question, are you dog fans or are you cat fans? And then start projecting all of your creation and content from that to those people.
And there's even, I think, a more fundamental question that you want to ask before that, which is, why are people here? And this goes to usefulness that we talk about, kind of one of the four foundational pillars of being a showrunner, which is you've got to be useful to people. And that means that you either have to educate people, entertain people, or inspire them, or some combination. But most importantly, you've got to understand the primary reason why people are there, right? So you're at a comedy show. You're there to laugh. Right. So the comedians, they obviously understand that. They understand that you're there to laugh. So, you know, you would think they're probably not going to get up there and tell some story that's going to educate you or inspire you. And maybe if they do that through one of your jokes, that's great. But you're there to laugh. They need to make you laugh. And I think it's important to remember that with our shows, why people are coming to our shows. And if we're going on someone else's show, if we're going to be elsewhere representing our work, what are those people coming here for? You know, because, you know, it's like, for instance, you know, if the owner had suddenly said to you, hey, Johnny, do you want to take a few minutes and promote Hack the Entrepreneur on the stage real quick? You know, now whether or not you would have done that, whether or not you would have been prepared for that, I don't know. But in that moment, if you had something funny to say or some kind of joke, like, you would have wanted to try to entertain those people, not just get up there and give them this really, you know, kind of bland description of what Hack the Entrepreneur is, because that's what the audience was there for. So it's always important whenever we have a chance to speak to an audience to understand why they're there. Like right now, we know that you are listening to this to be educated about podcasting in some way. So yeah, we're sharing stories and we hope to inspire you and all of that. But most importantly, we want you to walk away from this with something specific to make you a better showrunner. Just like a comedian at a comedy club wants you to walk away with laughs and memories of great jokes. That's what you're there for. The other stuff is nice and it's helpful, but it's not the most important thing. So if you understand that, why the audience is there, and then, you know, you can, you know, like with the dog and cat, split them even further and really define them, that's going to really allow you to hone in and make an impact.
Exactly. The next lesson is size doesn't matter. One is better than zero. I've talked about it as. And so this says, I mean, there was 18 people there. And somebody calls you and asks you or emails you and asks you to be on their show, and maybe it's not big enough. If somebody calls you and you're trying to be a stand-up comedian, or you are and you have been for years, some of these people, and it's like, how big is the room? Well, 18 people when we're sold out. If those people said no, it's funny because it's been 3 weeks since I've been there and I follow them on Instagram now, the club, but lots of those people have been back to play other nights on other weekends. And it's not necessarily the size, because it's true. Like, one of those people actually I follow now on Instagram, because he had a call to action at the end and he said, track me down on Instagram at, and he said his name. And I was like, that's impressive. And I did. And it's just him going through life, just like doing hilarious stuff with his coffee in the morning. But he's like top of mind. And now I know when he's played back at this club again, because the size doesn't matter of the venue. I said this 2 years ago when I started being asked to be on other people's shows. My show was doing really, really well. People would ask me and I would say yes to every single show, as long as I figured I could provide value. But it wasn't about what's in it for me? How many thousands of people listen to your show? Because that's nonsensical. If one person comes from that show and me taking half hour to talk to this host and I get one new listener, that's amazing. If that's not worth half an hour of your time, then I don't know what is. These people get to do 10 minutes to 18 people and they're ecstatic to do it. That's how you build a career. That's how you build an audience. That's how you build, like, I guess, a platform of to get to speak off of to more and more and more people.
You know, and I would say with this, I totally agree with this. I would say, you know, size doesn't matter, but intention and interest does matter. So, for example, you know, for a comedian to go to this show, they know that there's going to be 18 people in the audience who really like comedy. Like, they are there to see comedy. They're interested. So, for the comedian, if they can have an impact, they know that that person could be a fan. They're a consumer of comedy. You know, they can actually have an impact with that person. If you were saying, hey, this is a venue for music and people are here to see bands, but we've got 10 minutes if you want to do a comedy set. Now
I've
maybe
seen
you're
that a lot.
Now maybe what'd you say?
I've seen that a lot.
Really?
At shows, like at rock shows, they'll put quick comedians on.
And that may be not a great example because at least those people are interested in entertainment, you know, but it's a little bit more of a risk, right? And that's why another podcaster asks you to come on their podcast, why saying yes is such a good idea is because you know that the people who consume that content are podcast listeners, right? So maybe if you're asked to, you know, the difference would be if you're asked to do a guest post for a blog. Now you think about that a little bit more because you have to think, all right, if I'm trying to get listeners to my podcast, all right, I'm writing a blog post, a certain portion of these people won't listen to podcasts. Now maybe the size matters a little bit more because you want bigger numbers to make sure that you have a better chance of getting people to your podcast. But if you can get such a perfect fit like that where you are a podcaster or whatever your thing is and you can talk to people who are interested in that thing, then I agree. Even one person can make a big impact for you. But I would pay attention to the interest and the intent of the audience who you're going to be speaking to, because that can help you determine whether it is a smart use of your time or not.
Exactly. And when I was coming from the perspective of 2 years ago when I was starting, I almost wanted it for, I want to crash and burn in front of no one. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to get started, and it's like, yeah. I'm gonna say yes. I don't care if you want me to come to, like, your group of, like, mechanics having dinner or something and talk about business, and they don't care. But it's like, this is my chance to do it in front of people who don't care. So, perfect. I'll say yes to any opportunity so I can get better, so when the opportunity is right, I'm ready to rock.
But there is an opportunity cost to that time, though. You know,
right,
so what, you know, so you do have to take that into account, and right, especially as you start to get busier, you know, the size and those kind of things can matter a little bit more. But I certainly think leaning toward the mindset that you had is a smart thing, especially in the beginning. Hey, by the way, I mentioned at the start of this episode about our sponsor, Studio Press Sites. And so I just want to reiterate to folks, you know, if you're looking to start a podcast, or if you have a podcast, but you know, you're looking to build a website, you're not satisfied with your current website, and you want something different, something better, something that really helps you create the website that you will be proud to send your podcast listeners to, you know, we've told you a lot about Rainmaker here on the Showrunner, and Rainmaker is a great option, but Rainmaker isn't perfect for everybody. And so if you don't need that full, complete, all-in-one digital sales and marketing platform, Studio Press Sites is a great option. And there are actually a couple of different options within Studio Press Sites that you can choose. One of them is absolutely perfect for, you know, if you just want to have a website and a podcast and then have the ability to add some different plugins and some different functionality, but all the hosting and the security and the design, all of that stuff that can be hard, all of that's taken care of, then you really should take a look at Studio Press Sites. And if you go to the website, it explains it a lot better than I could do now. But I do know that the response to it has been great. There's a lot of internal excitement among the people here at Rainmaker Digital about the potential for Studio Press Sites and what it's doing already. So I highly recommend that you check it out. Rainmaker.fm/Studio Press. Again, it's Rainmaker.fm/Studio Press. And as I mentioned, over 200,000 website owners trust Studio Press. So if you're looking to get your website going for your podcast or take it to the next level, check out Studio Press Sites and see if it is the right option for you. Again, Rainmaker.fm/Studio Press. All right. Back over to you, Johnny, as we continue walking through these lessons from your stand-up experience.
Lessons from a comedy club.
Yes.
So lesson number three, and this is the one we sort of alluded to earlier, which is pay attention to your venue. So here's the conversation that I overheard, which was interesting, right? 18 person and 10 minutes or 45 minutes in front of 1,500 people. So there's these two comedians like discussing this behind me, and I had never really, I mean, I don't think about stand-up comedy, but the one guy was saying how he was or has been asked to do a 45 minute at in front of 1500 or 1600 people. And he was like, and he hadn't done something that long or in front of that big of an audience. So he was kind of reaching out to who he thinks of as mentors, I guess, in the comedy space. And they were explaining it to him. And he said, is like profoundly changing his mindset. But he was like, well, first of all, he's like, we come here to this tiny room and there's 18 people. And he's like, I need one joke for 10 minutes because really it's so small. I'm literally standing on people's tables and I'm just going to poke the audience and prod them until we just play and have fun. That's just how this works. And the comedian who can sort of play off the audience the best in this scenario wins. That's just how it is. But he's like, when you're standing in front of 1500 people, one thing, people are far away from you. You can't play off the audience. You need 45 minutes of jokes, solid routine and jokes. And that's hard. And I was like, wow, that's true. And it was like, it was funny because it was done, the six people. And I was like, that's true. These guys hardly had a joke, except they would like ask people questions and then make jokes about those people or about their situation or about their table or about whatever. And I was like, wow, that's so true. That's all these guys did. To me, it's interesting, right? Because it's that whole paying attention to your venue, knowing where you are, who you're speaking to, and what sort of will get them the result that they're looking for. If I'm sitting at the back of a room that has 1500 people in front of me, and that person is just a tiny little speck on a stage, if he just starts poking fun and talking and heckling the person in the front row and having a conversation with them for the next 40 minutes, I will be bored to tears at the back. One thing, because I can't hear the other side of the conversation, but when you're sitting right next to the person, you can hear everything and it's really hilarious and funny. But I was like, wow. And so I was like, this is a huge shift, like for the person to think that way. It's not just like, I can take this routine and move it here and put it in front of more people, or I can take this and move it here. And so this to me was really into that whole choosing a format for your show and really figuring out who it is you're speaking to and what venue you're speaking to them in and what that is that they're trying to get from it, right? I don't want to be sitting at the back of 1500 people and having a one-on-one conversation with somebody because it's not going to do anything for me. And this can happen a lot, I think, when we do shows in the wrong format where we think about ourselves too much and we don't think about that person sitting at the back of the room. There's always somebody sitting at the back of the room. Almost everybody's kind of sitting at the back of the room because they can't take part in a two-way conversation with you, at least in real time they can't. They can do it on social media, they can do it via email, all kinds of things, but it's really, really so obvious, and that's where a stand-up comedian, I think, escalates from 18 people room to 18,000, is knowing that change and not trying to do the same thing that got them from 18 people to 50 people to 200 people and trying to do the same thing all along and expect it to keep carrying you. At some point, it changes and the thing that got you here won't get you to there. You have to have a mindset shift change and make it very, very clear to your audience that you have done that.
And this is where self-awareness is very important. So if you are someone who is really good at the observational interactive humor, but you really struggle at kind of the reciting jokes and hang on to an audience when you can't create that interpersonal connection, you need to understand that about yourself. Because that will mean that either you shouldn't be aspiring for those big gigs, or you need to really work on that and get better before you're able to do that. And it's the exact same thing. I mean, if you're really good at, you know, writing 45 jokes and rehearsing them and getting up there on the big stage, but you're really bad kind of off the cuff and doing that, you need to know that so that you don't put yourself in those situations outside of, I'm doing this to try and learn and get better. And it's really important to understand, okay, I'm doing this because this is a demonstration of my expertise and I'm using this to build an audience because people will see this and this is my authority being demonstrated and here we go, as opposed to, all right, this is kind of a test and something new for me. You know, if you're horrible at interviewing and just really feel bad about it, it's not to say that you shouldn't do an interview on your show and that your audience is not going to give you some kind of leeway. But if you've really built an audience and you really don't have confidence in your interviewing, maybe you do that on the side and don't publish it live, you know, until you've practiced a little bit, you know? And so understanding your strengths and weaknesses and understanding, you know, what venue you're going to be putting this content out in is really important, just so that you're aware of what you're putting out to who and how they are going to take it and how they're going to view it. Self-awareness is, I mean, among obviously the most important attributes that anyone can have in anything, but it's extremely important to have as a showrunner.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as you say that, it's true. Like if, like one of my favorite comedians is Louis C.K. I mean, he draws you into the most mundane sort of story and then brings it somewhere completely that you weren't expecting, but they all take 10 to 15 to 20 minutes to draw out. So if I just wanted to start, and if I was like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian, I'm going to go to the Corner Comedy Club, and it's like, I'm going to emulate my favorite comedian. It's like, well, one thing, you have 10 minutes in front of 18 people. So you can't do a 20-minute story. Like, it's just a different thing, right? And so this is actually a sort of a side lesson of when we try, I think like sometimes, well, the reason why we start being podcasters is because we love listening to them and we want to also create like it. But if I listen to NPR style shows that like can dissect story and piece it together in ways with amazing editing and producers and stuff, and I just open up GarageBand for the first time, I shouldn't try and convince myself that I can do the same thing that NPR can. I need to start on the single stage for 10 minutes, not trying to emulate Louis C.K. or NPR at that point, because I need to be aware that NPR has spent 50 years and has producers and budgets, and Louis C.K. has spent 35 years on stages already working his way up.
Or you need to understand that you're good as an interviewer, you're not good as an audio storyteller, so don't even aspire to do the NPR-style podcast. Just put that out of your mind, that that's not something that you're going to do. You know, it. You know, a comedian doesn't need to be able to play to 20,000 people to carve out a good career as a working comedian. You know, and if that's not your thing, if you're better at the smaller venues interacting, then maybe that's what you build your career around. And I think the exact same thing goes for podcasting. Now, you may be horrible at interviews and you may be horrible at off-the-cuff conversation, but man, you're a good audio editor. You have a great ear for sound. You can tell stories, you know, so maybe that's the direction that you go in. Understanding that about yourself and using that awareness of your skills and your desires will help you go down the right path, both for your own show and whatever your career as a showrunner may be beyond the show that you have right now.
Which ties in so well to the final lesson, which is perspective. Nobody gets into stand-up and expects just to make it big and replace their job without years and years of grueling hard work, having people like heckle them, having just failing, having to play tiny venues with no people, having to play at rock shows, like you said, with people just aren't interested in your thing because it's the wrong venue for it. But it's, to me, like, to me, I've heard people podcasting that would, if two podcasters side by side were having a beer after and both knew that that's what they would say probably as a showrunner. You would say that only 18 people listened to me. These two comedians that were standing behind me that are my age and must have been doing this for at least 5 years each now and have ambitions of doing this full time because I've like looked into them on social media since then. But not one of them was like, I can't believe I'm only doing this for 18 people. It's a really different perspective. And I think it's the perspective that a lot of us could use to, I think, approach show running, knowing that it's not a way to get rich quick. It's not a way to just build an audience fast. It's not a way to transform your business quickly. It's something that takes years of practice and hard work to get better, to slowly build up that audience of 18 people and 18 people and 18 people. Take each time you sit down at the microphone as a lesson. Just like standing up in front of 18 people is a huge lesson for these people with years of experience. It's perspective. It really, truly is. And knowing that there's still that end goal, there's still that Louis C.K. out there, there's still that Marc Maron or that NPR, but those people have both of those. I mean, Marc Maron has been doing this for 25 years in different formats because podcasting didn't even exist, but it didn't just start. He started years and years and years and years and years ago. And you have to keep that into perspective, right? It can sound awesome that, that my show can be doing well and it can have sponsors. And it's like, yes, but I've been doing it literally 3 days a week for 2.5 years now. That's a ton. That's a ton of podcasting. That's a ton of focusing. That's a ton of writing for other people. That's being on 60 or 70 other podcasts, putting in that time and effort to build up that. That takes time, and that takes perspective that it will take time to get there. Nobody gets there overnight. Nobody gets there quickly, but it's worth going if that's where you want to go. But please don't go into it without that perspective.
And it's not just the time that it takes for your show to get listened to by enough people to generate an audience. It's the time that it takes for you to get good enough to, when you actually do attract people, to keep them around as listeners. Because the other part of this equation that is so important, and this is where, look, if you're going to be a good showrunner, you have to have the pride in yourself, the confidence to step behind the microphone and say, I've got something important to say, or I have something to contribute to the conversation about topic X. You've got to have something inside of you that believes that you have something worthwhile to say. But the minute that you start publishing and distributing your content out there and it hits the audience, your pride is far less important than your humility and your ability to listen and to pay attention to the response that your audience gives you. So for a comedian who is up on stage, that is about, you know, being able to understand the energy of the room, being able to listen to which jokes get laughter, which jokes don't, which jokes get belly laughter, and which jokes kind of get courtesy chuckles, and be able to iterate, to understand, oh, the timing of this joke worked really well this time, but the laugh wasn't as good this time, and the timing was a little bit off. Okay, so I need to really make sure that I do the timing here. You're paying attention to the response, and you're iterating. And maybe you think this is the funniest joke that you've ever told, and nobody laughs at three straight shows. Well, guess what? It doesn't matter what you think. You're trying to make other people laugh, not make yourself laugh. So you've either got to rework that or you've got to take it out. And it's the exact same thing as a showrunner. You may be doing interviews, for example, and you have this question that you think is the greatest question. And yet for some reason, every single time in your interviews, when this question comes up, it creates this awkward moment with the guest because they don't quite get what you're saying and their answer isn't very good. And, you know, it's not connecting with the audience. Well, okay, that's not a good question. You got to pay attention to that and you've got to iterate. And so having that perspective of not just the time in terms of days and weeks and months and years that it will take to be able to have your content exposed to enough people, but also the time that it will take you to get better. And the way that you get better is by truly paying attention to the response of your audience and to using that reaction to iterate and make things better. And I will say that one other thing on perspective is to remember that boos are better than nothing. So if you're a comedian and all you do, you go up on stage and all that ever happens is you just get boo after boo after boo. That to me is much better than just an apathetic response where you get nothing. Because if you get nothing, now you're left to wonder a little bit, wait, is this resonating? Is there something I'm doing to where people aren't even hearing me? Like, what's going on? At least if you get a boo, you know, all right, this sucks. This is not working. And that is good because it tells you go in a different direction. Maybe comedy's not for you. Maybe you need to go do something else. It is much better. So appreciate the boos. Remember that they're booing the character that you are presenting on stage or that you're presenting behind the microphone. And if you don't understand what we mean by that, go listen to last week's episode. But appreciate the boos because they are actually much more helpful to you than any kind of non-response. And of course, we want to get to the next cheer. We want people to like what we're doing and to respond to what we're doing. But we may have to go through a lot of boos to get there. And in a lot of ways, the boos are just, you know, opportunities to take direction to get ourselves to that next cheer. And they can actually be very helpful when we view them from that perspective.
Funny thing, one of the six comedians that night didn't get boos, just got complete silence and just train wrecked so bad that he got off stage, I'm going to say 4 or 5 minutes, just sort of froze up and walked off. But it was so small and so, like, there was no booing. It was just kind of like,
Not even like courtesy chuckles or anything?
No, it was just like, oh my God, what are you doing? And just, he just like sort of put his head down and just walked. And he's right there in the room with like, it's so intimate that it's just like, oh my God. But then another guy just ran up right after that and just took over and was like, here we go.
Wow. You know, that's interesting. You know, what is your role as an audience member at a comedy show? Because you are part of the show. Like, literally, your response can help encourage a comedian or make him feel more awkward and make the show worse. Like, but you also have an obligation to not just laugh at anything. I mean, you're there to be entertained. You want to make sure that they're actually jokes that make you laugh for real. You know, would you try to laugh a little bit and help this guy out? Or do you kind of have an obligation to not give courtesy laughter because you don't want this guy thinking that he made you laugh and then he's going to go to his next show and tell the same joke and it's actually not funny?
I paid $20 to be there, Jared.
I agree. And I think it's actually kinder to someone in that position. Like, it's different if you were sitting across the table from the guy at dinner and he's a friend, maybe you give him some courtesy laughter. His life isn't based on his ability to make someone laugh. But I kind of feel like it might be nice to give him courtesy laughter, but it wouldn't be kind in the long run because you'd be encouraging him to continue telling crappy jokes that are just not going to get laughter. I think it's actually a very kind thing to not laugh. But only if he's going to actually listen to the response and iterate based on it. So hopefully he or she will.
Exactly. So, lessons from a comedy club. Define who your audience is and speak to them. Remember the dog or cat owner split testing. Size doesn't matter. One is better than zero. The third one is pay attention to your venue because it does change how you need to deliver your message. And then the fourth one was perspective. Know that it all of this takes work. And also the perspective of when you get 200 or 500 or 1,000 downloads, don't think of it as only 500 when somebody else might get thousands of downloads, because think about that comedian standing on stage in front of 18 people and they're nervous and they're not just thinking, well, Louis C.K. just did 15,000 people last night down the street, so I shouldn't be nervous. They're freaking out. It's still super hard and it's super important what you are doing and what they're doing. So keep that perspective at all times. And then Jared wrapped it up with, I believe it was the boos are better than nothing and they are sometimes as important.
Yeah, and the last thing I just want to say, you know, in terms of lessons is, pay attention when you're out living your real life for stories that might not immediately seem applicable to your content, but can be. I mean, you know, just like Johnny did here, you know, bringing this topic to us where he's out at a comedy club. Okay, what does, you know, comedy have to do with show running? And maybe it's a little bit easier of a connection because, you know, there's kind of that performance aspect of it. But it can be such a great way to illustrate an idea in a different way. So always pay attention for these opportunities in your life where you have a story that is interesting, that can illustrate something in a different way. Bring that to your audience. It can be a good way to freshen up your content. It can be a good way to freshen up your own perspective and your own enthusiasm because you can talk about a similar thing but in a different way and look at it from a different angle. And a lot of times it can illuminate different things for you and different things for your audience. And that is part of course, being a great showrunner who delivers something remarkable to your audience. So always be on the lookout for those things and just make note of them. You may not exactly know where it'll fit, but make note of it. And later on, you never know. It might connect with something that you want to say anyway. So I will leave you with this, a reminder to go to rainmaker.fm/studiopress and check out Studio Press sites. And also this question, which we've been asking you at the end of these episodes, what could happen if you launch a podcast in the next 30 days? Or if you already have a podcast, what could happen if you commit to making your podcast better in the next 30 days? What could happen? We want to help you answer that question. And so we have a guide, the Beginner's Guide to Launching a Remarkable Podcast, which is a no-frills, simple 9-step plan to getting your podcast off the ground. Or frankly, they're all fundamentals to where even if your podcast is already off the ground, but you want a refresher or you want to find something new that you can add to it, this guide will help you do that as well. And you get this by going to showrunner.fm/report, along with a really cool email course that Johnny put together that will ask you some additional questions that no matter how long you've been running your show, it's important to know the answers to. So go to showrunner.fm/report, get that guide, get that email series, and it will help make you a better showrunner. showrunner.fm/report.
We've only been like call to actioning, CTAing this report for the last, this will be the third episode. So, and as of the recording of this right now, over 400 people have already downloaded the report. I think that's pretty awesome because we put a lot of work into it. Rafal put amazing design work into it. And it really, I think, outlines sort of our thoughts and philosophy and then some action steps of how to launch a show in 30 days. So it's pretty cool that many people have taken it up. And so, yeah, head over there and grab yourself a copy too.
Have you ever thought about doing stand-up comedy?
I have.
Really? Seriously?
Oh, no, not seriously. But I mean, it's crossed my mind. I love comedy. And it seems like something that'd be really hard. So
it does.
Those kind of things tend to push me to want to try them, things that are hard. But I don't think I will. But yeah, it's cool.
I'd be too terrified that I would come up with some metaphor on the spot that would crash and burn.
It's not like you at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Showrunner. We will talk to you next week on a brand new one.
Take care.